Welcome to this week's episode of The Nerdy Rat. We'll be talking about snuggly ratties, bitey ratties, losing a ratty, and we're also going to talk about a terrible movie, Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. So here we go.
Hey everybody, welcome. This is episode 10. It is the first of, what month is this?
August? Yes,
August 2017. 1st. This is our 10th episode.
Yep, I'm Liz. This is Matt.
Hello.
Hello.
So we'll see, what are we going to talk about first?
Well, I guess we're going to say that our sweet albino ratty Tippy Toe, we had to put her down in between now and the last episode. We thought she was maybe having a respiratory infection, but it wasn't getting better. We had her on both Doxy and Baytril because it was so bad. And
it came out of nowhere, too. And the doctor really thinks that it was more than likely congestive heart failure,
yeah.
Was it congenital or congestive?
Congestive heart failure.
Okay, so basically it just causes fluid on the lungs.
And so, you know,
anything you can do for them at that point because it's basically their heart is failing.
Yeah, and she was an old girl. I mean, she was probably about two. She's the one who had been astray and then someone rescued her and brought her to the rescue. So we've had her for a long time.
Yeah, she was the one they found outside, mm-hmm. right?
Yep. They found her outside. And she was young enough when we got her that we went ahead and got her spayed because we thought it would still be effective. And I think it was
because mm-hmm. she never got any tumors.
No mammary tumors. So yeah, she had a good long life. I really miss her though. And so like for us, the way we made the decision is that, you know, we were treating her for a week. You know, it seemed that severe, but it didn't seem necessarily like she was in excessive distress. But then
it definitely sounded like she had fluid on her lungs, though, which is.
Well, the last day. Yeah.
I mean, even though I think that with how strong she was wheezing, she had some amount of fluid.
Yeah.
On her lungs.
Yeah. So it's always hard. I don't know if we should have maybe put her down sooner. Our rat coordinator was of the opinion that we should try the Doxy and the Baytril for a week and
But we gave it a good 4 days to try and.
Well, I think it was more like a week because we started her on a Saturday night and then it was on a Friday
from the first day she was on it until we had her put down. She did not improve at all. Mm-mm. On it. I mean, we gave her a chance to improve, and it was clear
it wasn't respiratory at that point. And so the reason why I took her in, and I do wonder if maybe we should have taken her in a couple days sooner, but the reason why I took her in was because that Friday Matt was at work and I just came down and she just sounded in distress. I mean, she sounded like she was having difficulty breathing as opposed to just the hooting. And Pinky and Baby Groot had been so sweet to her. Like, as she was getting sick, they just stayed by her side the whole time. They were cuddling her. Like, they wouldn't leave her alone, you know? And so I took them with me when I took Tippy Toe to be put down so they could ride with her in the carrier. And they were just comforting her. They laid their little heads on her. And it made me sad. It made me happy, but it made me sad. Like, it was happy to see how sweet the ratties are and how empathetic and loving they are to each other. And Tippy Toe was like their aunt. Like, she's known Baby Groot and Pinky since they were 6 weeks old because we adopted them and we had already had Tippy Toe. And so, you know, I think they were her favorites and they just loved her all the way up until the end. So,
yeah, well, this is the hard part of owning rats. Yeah. Is you generally. Over 2 years old is elderly, and mm-hmm. they frequently, when they go quickly because their bodies just don't last very long once they start to decline.
Yeah, and you know, I could tell it was coming because like about a month before she got the heart failure, she started losing muscle tone. And so she wasn't losing weight, but I could just tell that her skin felt like looser and stretchier and just softer. And so you could tell there wasn't as much muscle there. And I've seen that happen with our other rats. And usually once they start losing the muscle tone, like within a month, they'll be gone.
Well, that's like... At that point, they're elderly.
Exactly.
If they get really any number of things can can take them at that point.
Yeah.
So. But it's sad, but we loved her and she had a good life with
us. She did. She was so happy.
Much better than living outside where
she would have been killed off probably pretty quickly. She just loved it. And she was our hoarder because I think it was because she was so traumatized by being lost outside. She stashed food like nobody's business. I mean, all of the dry food. She had multiple hiding places for it. And
now they all do it.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's really cool because the last month or so when she was getting too old to do it, Toro and Nim really stepped it up and they kind of took charge of the stashing. And yeah, I think they all do it now. But like Toro and Nim, I noticed, were like especially diligent about the stashing once Tippy Toe got older. And it was like she trained her successors to take over for her.
And they definitely miss her.
And they do.
As much as we do.
Yeah. So talk about Pinky and Toro, because I think this is a result of Pinky kind of maturing a little bit with Tippy Toe's passing.
Well, I mean, I've just seen them together a lot where they weren't really...
They were
kind of fighting
before.
Yeah. But now I see them cuddled up together all the time. But I see that happen with a lot of rats where like they'll be standoffish with each other at first and then they kind of figure the stuff out and they become friends.
And you know what was interesting is that Pinky and Toro were the reason why we had some difficulties introducing Toro to the cage, because, you know, he fought her a couple times and we talked about this in another episode. And then even afterwards, when we got them all introduced, Pinky would still be a little drama queen and she would just squeak, squeak, squeak whenever Toro tried to come snuggle with her.
Yeah, remember that? Yeah.
And so I think it's just really sweet that maybe Pinky kind of grew up a little bit emotionally when she was taking care of Tippy Toe. And now she's like so much more loving to Toro. And I just love it. I love seeing that.
They learned an important life lesson about loss.
They did. And they kind of learned that, you know, everybody's lonely and
rats are just like people.
Yeah, so. They are. They are so sweet.
So a little bit happier news. We got two new fosters now.
Yep.
We got who did we have before them? They got adopted.
Had Rojo and Pinky.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah, Rojo and Pinky got adopted.
So we got two new boys.
They're brothers. They've lived together their whole lives.
Willow and Hummus. And they're both.
Oh, sorry. I hit my microphone. Yeah, sorry about that.
I was going to say, are you?
Yes, I'm fine. I just hit it by mistake. I'm okay. Wait. Okay, now I'm better.
You okay?
Yes.
Okay. So
sorry, everybody.
They're both Dumbo-eared, and they're both really cute. They've been squabbling a little bit, and I think that's just a result of them being adult male rats.
They're
like,
not
they don't
neutered. Yeah.
Fight a lot, but they do.
They did a little bit.
Yeah. There's been four or five times that they've gotten into fights, and they don't seem to be really hurting each other. But I think we've made the decision to go ahead and get them neutered. It makes them getting along in adulthood a lot easier, I think.
Right.
And once they've started fighting, I feel like if you don't neuter them, there's always the potential that they will eventually get into a fight where they hurt each other
or kill each other, and you don't want that. So yeah, I'm really pleased the rescue made the decision to go ahead and neuter them. I think it's for the best. You know, I know it's an expense on the rescue but I think it'll be good for them. Now, what was interesting when they came in is that they were really bitey at first. And like they would, not in a mean way, because they did like to kiss and interact. But like if I had my finger too close to them and they would be kissing 1 minute and then they would chomp on it like hard.
They've grabbed onto me a couple of times, but they haven't actually bitten me.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure where that behavior comes from. But I wonder if their old family didn't handle them as much, because I don't get the sense that they were handled a whole lot.
No, because it's hard to pick them up and they don't like being held. So it's interesting. It seems like maybe they're used to having people like interact with them, but not hold them.
Yeah, and I think that can happen with rats if you interact with them, but don't actually pick them up.
Right.
And some people do. That's how they are with their rats.
Right.
It's
kind of like
pets fine, but when you then try to interact with them, they're not used to it. They get scared.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to like hold them shortly each time, a little bit each day, trying to get them. And they're coming around. Like
they are. And it's interesting. We've had them less than 2 weeks and they're already getting better at being held. And they're actually getting better with the biting too. So I think the biting could have been a combination that they were just scared because they didn't know us. They were in a new cage. But also, I suspect that their teeth were a little bit too long, because the first several days they were here, they were gnawing on all the wood toys in their cage a lot.
It's really important.
Much more than normal rats.
It's really important to have stuff in the cage that right. your rats can gnaw on.
Wood stuff is the
wood
best.
Wood blocks, snack shacks.
Lava blocks. Yeah.
You know, wood.
A variety of stuff.
Basically, so wood and any kind of chew toy that you can give them. Their teeth are constantly growing, like all rodents. So if they don't wear them down somehow.
Right.
Because usually they use them for like, you know, digging and, mm-hmm. and making their, like, chewing out
right.
homes and stuff like that. So.
Right. So they need to be able to wear them down. So I think the combination of those things, and also what I've been doing to train them some, is when I hold my fingers up to them, if they start to bite, I give them a little check with my finger, meaning that I push back against them very gently. Now, I'm going to caution that if you want to try this, you have to be gentle, and you have to do it with like a heart of love, because they will know if you're being mean to them when you push back at them. But what I do is I just push back really gently, and I say the word, I say gentle, and I just push back a little bit, because that's how a mother cat or any other mother animal would check their baby if the baby starts to play bite and it gets too hard, because they have to teach them. And like, actually, part of the reason how I learned to do that was I saw that with baby cheetahs, sometimes that are orphaned or their mothers don't care for them, they put a dog with them when they're young, because the dog will check them the way that the human keepers can't check them. So the dog will actually like give them the pushback or the little nip or whatever if they get too aggressive. And because they have to learn, what a play bite is. And they're actually, for whatever reason, I think it's a combination of all the things, they're doing a lot better with the bitiness.
So. Yeah, they haven't done that a lot to me in the past week or so. Me neither.
They haven't really chomped. They've really started getting good, and they're very sweet. I mean, they really like to like lick me and like kiss, and they're pretty good too about snuggling in the bonding pouch. What they'll do is like they'll snuggle in the pouch with me for a few minutes. They'll snuggle together with each other, but then they both like to get out and go explore all around. So
yeah, they were running all over
the
computer desk
yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had them in the chair too. We have like two armchairs next to each other, and like they would stay and snuggle for a little bit, and then they'd go run under the blanket with me and go climb in the other chair. So they're definitely explorer boys, but like they do like to snuggle a little bit together. So, and they're up for adoption if anybody's in the DC Maryland area.
Yeah, they're really sweet boys.
Yeah.
So I
think
they would, and they're going to be neutered soon. So.
Yeah, exactly. So the fighting should be a non-issue after that.
And boys that are neutered are really sweet.
Yes, and they tend to get much snugglier after the neuters. Like, I think our boy Peter, who we adopted, was a lot less snuggly before the neuter, and after he got neutered, him and Fievel just love to snuggle in the bonding pouch now.
Yeah,
all
of our boys are really sweet. Yeah, now that they've all been neutered.
So I'm really glad that's going to happen for them, and I think they'll be very adoptable after the neuter. So yeah. I think that I hope they get good homes. They're very pretty looking too. Like Hummus is white, but he's got a little bit of a gray hood, but he's got all these like gray speckly spots on his back. And it's kind of unusual. I don't usually see all the little speckles. And I think it's really pretty. And Hummus has the dark hood, but he's got like a little white streak on it, which is kind of like our girl Carly had, but the inverse. She had like a dark streak and he has a white streak. So just very pretty ratties, very sweet. We'll try to post some pictures of them, actually. We'll try to get some good pictures of them and post.
Put them on our
Twitter. Yeah, put them on our Twitter feed and on our Facebook page.
Cool. So there was I saw this really cute story I wanted to talk about.
I'll put
a link to it in the show notes. But
it was really cute.
There's a cat cafe in Brooklyn. And they posted a video on their Instagram, I guess, of this little rat bathing a little baby kitten.
Yeah.
And the story is really cute. Apparently, this cafe has been doing this for a little while now. What happened was they had a little kitten that was feline HIV positive.
Or leukemia? I think feline leukemia.
Was it feline
leukemia?
Yeah, I think it was
leukemia.
I thought
it
was... I don't think they get
HIV. I think it was leukemia.
It was something that they couldn't put it with other cats.
Right.
Let me see. I'm going to read. read the.
And so while he's looking that up, so by the way, the cafe is run by a nonprofit cat rescue, I guess. And so the cats are all adoptable. And what they do is they have the bakery next door, which I guess they also own and run. But for health inspector reasons, you can go buy your food at the bakery and then you can come on through and sit and snuggle with the cats in a really nice cafe lounge with like chairs and stuff, couches, stuff for the cats to play with.
Yeah. So apparently 4 years ago, the kitten tested positive for feline leukemia, which I guess is contagious to other cats.
It is. Yeah. And I don't,
which
even
is
know
weird
that
it's a blood cancer is contagious.
It is though. I don't know why, but it is. Maybe so, if they scratch each other or something, maybe, I don't know. Maybe that's
it. I guess if they get
or saliva,
blood or,
maybe, I'm not sure.
Yeah. So they didn't want the cat to be alone, but they put it with a rat, this white rat named, he's named after the...
Was it Ivory?
It was Ivory, because it was Ebony, they were Ebony and Ivory. So so they put the rat, and the rat would take care of the kitten, basically, and clean its face and everything. And I guess the kitten passed away after a little bit because of the leukemia. But so they started doing this for other kittens that were orphaned. They would put rats with them, and the rats would take care of them and clean them, and
just give them companionship.
Yeah, and I was like, our rat and him would totally do that.
Oh, she totally would.
She grooms us all the time.
Oh, she loves to groom. She loves to groom. And actually, I was saying earlier, Baby Groot, who's one of her babies. Baby Groot loves to groom me to the point where Baby Groot takes her little paws and like moves my fingers around so she can get like better licking access. It's like getting a little manicure from my ratty. But yeah, they would totally do that. And I love too that the rats they get are from a rat rescue. And it looks like they've adopted a couple rats who are like their permanent pets who do this for the kittens.
Yeah. It's just so cool. It's like it reminded me of the pairing the dogs with the cheetahs.
Exactly. It's like that same idea, the interspecies. Because I guess the reason why they did the rats is the rats can't catch the feline leukemia.
Yeah, they can't catch it. Also, rats are super social animals, so they will take care of each other even if they're not like family members. So
And what they said is that the kittens were too young to bite the rats and the rats weren't scared of them.
Yeah, like a kitten is not really much of a threat to a full grown rat.
But
I mean, they also said they had some that had mothers with the rats, and they had to keep an eye on them. Anytime you let cats and rats interact, you need to keep a close eye on them.
Super cautious. Like our cat is super gentle, but we still watch him. Like
I feel like our cat would be fine if he didn't think the rat tails were a toy for him to chase around.
Yeah,
because that's what messes it. That's what he always gets him in trouble. Is he sees the rat? The tail will be hanging out, and he'll grab the tail.
Right,
because
he thinks it's a toy.
No.
But, you know, he's really good, though, when they're out. He likes to just sit, and, like, his eyes get all big and gentle, and we call him Papa Kitten when he does that. And he just looks, like, so adoring at them. But the only time I would be scared is if they ran at him to attack him, because then he would probably swat him in self-defense. And he wouldn't mean to hurt them, I don't think.
Well,
but
historically, he's run away like a scared baby whenever that happens. Do you remember the video I had of foster?
I
had this foster named Rose, who was very outgoing.
Yes.
And when I would be playing with her kitten, would jump up, and then she would chase her off.
Chase
kitten off.
Yeah. But you know what? Kitten's gotten like much more comfortable with the rats and he's become like much more nurturing towards them. So like I've seen once where like a rat got a little too close to him and he was very gentle, but he lifted his paw to be like, no, don't you come near me.
Yeah.
So I don't know what he'd do. And that's why it's important to always closely supervise.
I've had him bat at some of them. Before,
yeah.
So you really have to keep an eye on
him. Yeah.
I just thought the story was so cute. I wish we had cat cafes around here. I'd go hang out.
I know. Me too. Or rat cafes. Because they have a rat cafe out in LA.
I think generally they're pretty good because they help a lot with adoptions too. Like they'll have kittens there that are available.
Yeah, they're all
for
adoptable,
adoption.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really nice.
Yeah, I thought that was an awesome article.
Mm-hmm. I liked it.
Yeah,
and
go and check
really
it out.
Sweet.
It's on the Huffington Post.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll post the link on the show notes.
Yeah, that'll be there.
Yep.
Do we have any other ratty stuff to talk about?
I don't
there any other animal news you wanted to cover?
Oh, yeah, I did want to talk about my little enrichments that I did. And actually, we could post the video of the enrichment on the paper towel tube one. So I was just thinking about ways I could provide more enrichment for the rats, because, you know, in zoos, they do a lot of that because it's so important for the animals to use their brains and kind of use behaviors they would use out in the wild so they don't get lazy and lethargic and they keep their brains sharp and all that. So what I did is we had an empty paper towel tube and I ripped the ends like in thirds and folded them in, but it wasn't completely closed, and I filled it with peanuts. And they could still see the peanuts and smell the peanuts, but they couldn't just reach in and pull them out because I had folded the tube over. So, you know, the goal, of course, was for them to be able to unwrap it and get in there and get the peanuts. Well, they started out very, very interested, and I thought Baby Groot was going to figure it out quite fast. But over a couple minutes, they all kind of gave up, which kind of made me think I need to do more enrichment puzzles with them so that they don't give up so easily. But my baby Toro, my smart little sweetheart, was so persistent, and he started figuring out that he could rip it. And he finally ripped it open and he got his peanuts and he was so excited. And then the other rats came down, of course, and got the peanuts too. But well, I was so proud of my little baby Toro.
Toro's also the one that's always making nests in the cage too.
He is. He'll frequently be pushing
stuff up against the wall.
Yeah, he just like pushes the litter up against the wall like he's a little bulldozer. He's so precious. I am so glad we adopted him. He was the one, of course, we talked about in other episodes. He'd been raised by himself his whole life, which is so bad for rats. Please don't do that to your rats.
Yeah.
He was so depressed. And he has become such a happy little boy since he's been living with our pack.
They're such social animals.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think.
Like, yeah. I see a lot of people on Facebook groups who are like, well, I give my rat all the love and attention they need, whatever, whatever. But, I mean, you can't convince people who have made their minds up. But
if you go to a pet store, that's probably what they'll tell you.
Yeah.
They'll let you take a single rat home absolutely. And be like, oh, it's fine.
Of course.
They recommend it, but it's fine.
Right. And it's like, you know what? You can't convince someone who's got their mind dead set against it that they're wrong. But, you know, the scientific evidence is quite clear that rats are social and they need other rats. Yeah. So. Anyway, Toro's been a happy little boy, but I was so proud of him for figuring out the little puzzle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's move transition. On then to some nerdy stuff right here at the Nerdy Rat.
Yeah, so I said in the intro, we have a terrible movie to discuss.
Yeah, spoiler alert, the movie's really bad.
Yeah, I don't see it.
So it's Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets.
We saw it last night.
It's based on a French comic book that's pretty famous from the 60s in France, I guess.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
It was originally in 1967. I guess the last one was written like in 2010. Oh, okay. I read the Wikipedia.
Oh, okay.
On the
Now, I knew it was based on a comic book, but I didn't realize
so the comic book sounds a lot better.
Yeah, I bet it was.
The movie makes it seem. And I think my main problem with this movie and was just the relationship between Valerian and all. First off, it's called Valerian, and it turns out Valerian's the name of the guy in the movie, and the original comic book was called Valerian and Loreline because they're the two main characters, and that's what all the stories are written about. And for some reason, this is just Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. So it started out
Okay, go ahead.
So it started out really good because it had this montage where it shows how this City of a Thousand Planets came to be, and it's basically. So we're going to talk spoilers, but so basically the whole concept is that the space station above Earth starts docking with other space stations from other countries, and it shows this montage of like, you know, the first the Americans welcoming the Russians and then welcoming all these other planes, and they keep going and more countries come in and then aliens come in,
right?
And they just keep adding to this space station over and over, and it's it is repeated shot of them shaking hands with all these different races, all these different species, and like it shows it growing, then eventually gets so big that it has to leave Earth, and then it shoots out into the stars and it's this giant city. That was all really cool. Then it gets into this weird setup for the main story. And then we get to the characters of the movie, Valerian
and Loreline.
And Loreline. And that's where it just kind of takes a nosedive.
Oh, and from the
because
very
like
get-go.
The first scene of them is basically Valerian
physically assaulting Loreline.
He's trying to convince Loreline to like, I guess, sleep with him or date him or something. Yeah. It's all they're really talking about. We get no information about who these characters are.
Right.
Other than they work for some sort of government and they're like sergeant and major.
And then let's back up for a minute. The very first thing you find out about him, even before you find that out, is that Loreline comes out there with a drink. He grabs her and throws her down on the lounge and she says, "No, get off me," and he does it again. And I'm like, "Oh my God."
And there's like there's no setup to any of this.
No, it's, you just have this horrible, creepy guy.
You don't know who these two people are, no. You don't know what the relationship is prior to this. You don't know.
It's clear she doesn't want him to be throwing her around.
It's just like they're working together and then he's just hitting on her, I guess. And
yeah,
it's like,
and then you find out they're colleagues and you're like, oh wait, that's even
and
worse.
It's like, yeah, like office romances are pretty creepy in general.
But especially when it's like military and chain of command, that's like not but even it, allowed. It's like, that's like sexual harassment on such a huge level.
And it's just like it's because you have no context for it. It just comes across as super creepy. If you knew anything about these characters, or maybe there was some establishment of what happened before the movie, what they did, who they worked for, what the government in quotation mark is, because they never go over this. It just goes into basically him creeping on her, and then that continues throughout the entire movie.
And she's made it clear from the beginning she's not interested, and yet his creeping, and you know, this is where I use the term rape culture, because his creeping eventually works. You know, he decides to propose to her out of the freaking blue.
Oh yeah,
out of the blue, well, and then she basically accepts it.
That's when it really got creepy. It's like, so she rebuffs him at the beginning, and then like
repeatedly,
and then like 10 minutes later, he like proposes marriage. It's like, come on, dude. Like, like she doesn't want to be with you, so you're gonna ask her to marry her. That's so freaking bizarre and creepy.
Yeah, and then he proposes, that suddenly seems to soften her
and
up.
And I'm not sure like why. Oh. So I looked it up, and Luc Besson did write the screenplay.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
And I feel like he doesn't understand how men and women interact in the real world.
I know. He must be a creeper himself.
Whatever his experience is being Luc Besson, this is like, I guess this is how he interacts with women. But like at no point in the movie does she actually like express like
that she
they end up together in the end for some reason, and but like it
well
never,
because that's Luc Besson's fantasy, like in his fantasy this is how men treat women, but women
but it's
just
like,
ooh, okay,
it,
then
it never it like you never understand why she would even like him, and
exactly.
And it's like
there's no
this,
reason
this might have been better if it had been a different actor, but the actor was super creepy too, and he's smarmy and and greasy and like not likable
at all. And I kind of felt like Luc Besson was trying to go for like a Matthew Broderick, Ferris Bueller, but he wasn't that. Like, he was creepy and gross. He wasn't cute
and
charming.
The thing was, like, the movie, there was moments in the movie that seemed like they could have worked in a different film written by somebody else. I was saying this last night. If they removed all the relationship stuff, I would have almost recommended this movie. If they had just removed it completely and just had two people with a normal freaking work relationship, I probably would have loved this movie. But
and
it was
if they had replaced Valerian,
so creepy and so forced, and so just like not how people react.
Oh,
like
it was really difficult to watch.
If any in the real world, if any guy had treated any girl, no matter how attractive either of them is, treated them the way that this guy treats this girl, she would have like left long ago.
Yeah,
and he would have like, oh, I'm in the red zone, I'm trapped, and she would have been like, good,
Yeah, leave him. Seriously.
Leave him. Screw good. That.
Yeah.
I have no interest in saving this guy exactly. at all.
Because, right, there was no motivation for her to save him. She clearly didn't like him from the beginning. And there was him proposing wouldn't realistically change
like
that.
The movie kind of made me want to read the comic books. Because I feel like any of the good ideas must have come from the comic comics. Books.
I agree.
And, like, I liked Rihanna's character, even though, like,
they had
the
strip
whole,
instead of
yeah,
having
instead
her.
Yeah, instead of
like,
having her.
Like, well, not literally strip.
Well,
I guess she did pole
let's
dance.
Explain. So, yeah. like. Rihanna's character is basically like a shapeshifter.
Yeah.
And
but she's,
the way
she
we're introduced,
operates in Pleasure well, Alley, where Valerian ends up.
Well, the introduction we get to her is this extended like pole dancing scene.
Yeah.
Where she like changes outfits a bunch of times. And
right.
it's like.
But she's pole
and
dancing.
And it's completely unneeded for the plot. Like, yeah. like it serves no purpose other right. than he wanted Rihanna to do like a strip tease. For
exactly.
And it goes for on minutes. For like. An uncomfortable amount of time.
Yeah, and like Rihanna like, is singing on the soundtrack in the background, but you have Rihanna in your movie. Why not have her sing a song? Like, if he's gonna go see an act or something, then have her sing. Don't
I guess
have her pole dance.
He was trying to do like the Plava Laguna thing, but like he totally missed what made Plava Laguna in the
now,
Fifth
what's
Element.
Plava Laguna?
She was the diva in Fifth Element.
Oh, okay. I didn't know her name.
Like when
yeah,
she did
well,
the
exactly.
singing.
But
and
the diva sang. She didn't strip and she didn't do a pole dance. Like that's
yeah, but
exactly
she did
my
a
problem.
Same, but it's like this, because this right. character is introduced. She does right. something to help along the story and then
right.
she dies.
Right.
And he like took that formula and totally screwed
right.
it up. Like,
right.
like, cause she, like, she's really interesting, and then she's like, "Oh, I'm died for some reason."
Yeah, you don't
she
even
she literally
see her get
says
hurt in the fight.
She literally says, "I must have been injured in the previous in the last battle."
Yeah,
and then
she dies.
Just like turns into dust.
Cleopatra, and
it's
she
like
dies.
We don't need her for the story anymore.
Oh, the one
Let's
thing I did
her.
Think was funny when he, was what he said to her when she's dying. He goes, "You are the greatest artist in the universe," and it she turns into like Cleopatra, and she was just like totally Rihanna in that moment. She's like, "Thank you, I know."
Yeah.
I like that. That made me chuckle. But aside from that, no. It. But
that's
I
what
actually
said, like the movie had so many good small moments like that.
Right.
That
right.
if you had given a competent screenwriter
exactly.
these ideas, they could
exactly.
have turned into a fantastic
well,
movie.
Well, and here's the thing too. I felt like up until they got to like the Pleasure Alley, where it was basically like you know the prostitutes and whatever. I felt like it could actually have been a pretty fun kids movie if they had geared it for that genre, if they had replaced Valerian, and if they had made more of the comedic moments and made the comedic moments like
well,
bigger
they could have fixed
and like a funnier story. They could have made this like a great Disney kids. Film, but of course they didn't go that route, and it was
well,
just
it's like Luc Besson came across as edgy in the 90s. Now he just comes across as creepy and like
so.
Out
here's
of touch
what I think,
with reality.
And we disagree a little bit on this, but I think that Luc Besson is basically like a George Lucas who was probably heavily edited and heavily kept on a short chain for Fifth
See,
Element. That is my suspicion because I have never seen him make a good movie on his own, and I really suspect that because he was such a young filmmaker then, I think other people made The Fifth Element what it was. I
See,
really doubt
I,
it was
I don't
him.
Know enough about the production of The Fifth
I
Element.
I don't either,
but
I suspect based on
I
his
think,
other work.
I think you're probably mostly right. I think we disagree a little bit on what happened with Luc Besson. I think he does have some genuine talent. I feel like he's kind of used it up in
and
his
and
early
I feel
career.
The opposite.
And
I feel
like
he
he's,
probably never
I feel
had
like
it.
He's very, he's a very hit or miss artist, kind of similar to M. Night Shyamalan, where it's like,
well,
in the right situation, you can get real good stuff out of
him. But that's what
but
I think. I think the right situation is when you have people heavily editing him. Because I feel like that with M. Night Shyamalan, too, is that I strongly suspect he had the studio, the producers, a lot of executives, you know, making his early movies what they were. Because some of them were good. And I think same with George Lucas, same
I think
with
a lot
Luke
of
Besson.
His movies are carried by his actors, too. And I think
But the
when
pacing is better. And I wonder if they had, like, really good editors.
Yeah,
and, like,
that's
the story
true. Because
is better.
The, pace,
the writing is better.
The,
I mean, I would wonder
writing,
if they had other writers on
well,
them, too, on
the
early movies.
The writing and the pacing on this movie is totally messed Terrible. Up. Like there's so many weird side plots that feel just jammed in
honestly,
out of nowhere.
The movie felt like it was 5 hours long. And it was barely 2.5.
It needed
it felt
to
like
be,
it was 5 hours.
It needed to be cut. It needed to be simplified. Everything in the movie needed to be simplified. And it's like he just lost track of what he was doing. Like,
well, and what bothered me too is that with the plot, they don't really explain the plot to you as they go along. You don't really find out what everything means until 2/3 of the way through the movie. So I felt like I wasn't engaged at all in the plot. I wasn't invested in what happened because I was being kept in the dark and I didn't know what was going on.
I felt like I felt like the way the whole plot and that whole thing was handled was super heavy-handed.
It was just badly.
Like, I got it. Like, when they explained it, you were like, okay, we get it. But it's not really...
It's not really that engaging.
It's not really that interesting.
Yeah, it just is not that interesting.
And it was super predictable too. The whole time. Also, like, a lot of the inconsistencies really bothered me too.
A lot of
the
what?
Inconsistencies. Like, one moment they're explaining how these different areas of the station, and they go north, west, east, and south. Well, what does that mean on a space station? What do you determine north is on a space station? You know what I mean?
Right.
But I'm like, whatever, that's fine. But then they explain how like these different races and different environments exist on these different parts, distinct parts of the space station that's supposed to be enormous, right?
Right.
And then, like, in a scene not 10 minutes later, the dude runs through two of the different areas that are supposed to be on completely different parts of the space station within 10 seconds of each other. And I'm just like, why are you doing all this, too? Like, also, like, the part where they show up at Alpha, at the space station, and then, like, the computer starts expositioning the space station.
I know. That was like, so bad. Like the computer literally narrates exposition to the characters.
Have these characters never been to the space station before when this seems to be the base of operations of everything?
I know. It's just crazy.
And it's just like...
Oh, it was just bad.
It's like they literally... They should have just got a computer. Could you give us some exposition for the audience?
So
we could heavily handed explain this thing that we spent 10 minutes setting up at the intro of our movie?
I know.
Like, what was the point of having that cool intro if you're just going to explain everything?
Well, and you know what? That's another point, is that the movie title is The City of 1,000 Planets. Well, they didn't really focus on anything special about the space station at all. It was all about the story with the general and the soldiers and all of this. So why not make it a really cool story about all the different people who live on the city and all the different zones and all of this? Why not use that as an integral part of the plot if that's in the title?
Yeah. And like, so much bad. Oh my god!
Oh, like, it was just terrible.
Another part is too when, the opening action sequence. I guess they're like go to this market or whatever, and they have to recover this thing, right?
Right.
And they meet up with what I guess are like mercenaries or something to help them.
Yeah. I guess so. They don't really explain anything. Well.
Yeah, they don't explain any of that, but like, in the course of escaping, they basically leave all of these mercenaries to die, which is like six or seven people, right?
Yeah.
Just to die, kill this giant animal thing, which I didn't like the number of animals, like even if they're alien animals that they needed to kill in this movie.
Yeah.
So, and they do all that, and their boss is like, you're 20 minutes behind schedule. And he's like, oh, time flies when you're having fun. And it's like, you're not going to talk about the seven people that they just sacrificed to make this happen?
I know.
Also, like, that's your big concern is you're 20 minutes late.
I know. Like, when a difficult operation.
You're recovering. Also, like...
Just so ridiculous.
Also, like, so one of the main things in the movie was this creature that can replicate things. You basically like feed it something and it like pops it out.
That's why I thought this would be a kids movie, a good Disney movie for kids, because it would be hilarious if you had almost, kids in the audience.
It doesn't like poop it like excretes it from its skin, like
it's like it pooped it,
but it was creepy. Yeah, it was
it pooped.
So the whole thing is like this bad guy, quotation marks, steals this thing for the race of blue people.
I think and
they're like, you know, what are you going to pay me for this thing that I stole for you? And they're like, oh, we'll replicate a bunch of these little pearl things and give them to you. And he's like, well, I have this thing. Why wouldn't you just keep the thing and like replicate money?
I know.
Or like replicate something valuable. Like just nonsense writing. It's like,
and then what bothered me too is that creature was supposedly the last of its kind. Well, it's eventually going to die. What are these pearl people going to do then? You know, but that's not going to sustain them if they just have one left and it's going to die. Like, you know, so that
nothing in this movie
sense
made
either.
Any sense, though. I kept thinking throughout the whole movie, like, this movie is nonsense.
Yeah,
it's just nonsense after
what
nonsense.
What bothered me is as it seemed like Luc Besson's creepy personal fantasy about, you know, how men treat women and the sexual fantasies.
It was just, I think
like,
it, was,
it
just,
was just
that's
creepy.
How he thinks men and women interact
think,
with each
yeah.
other because he's yeah. a super like he's Luc Besson. He's got tons
know,
of
I'm
money.
Sure
I'm sure that's how he interacts with women,
and
nobody
sure
calls him out
women.
On it because he's
yeah.
Luc Besson.
Exactly. I'm sure
you
there's
know?
Plenty of women who allow him to hit on them.
But
whatever.
But even besides that, like. It's just bad
it
writing.
It is so bad.
It's
I know.
Bad writing all around.
Totally.
There, any part of this you could look at and go, here's 10 problems with this scene.
Exactly.
Here's 10 problems
exactly.
with your setup. Here's 10 problems.
Exactly.
Like any aspect of this movie. And it's like, just like, I mean, if you're that bad at writing, just let somebody else write it for
exactly.
you. Like you're
exactly.
still a good director. Like I think overall, like,
I don't think he's a good director, but I don't think he's good at anything. I think he's not good if people aren't helping him.
Well, I mean, I've always said that he's very hit or miss. All of his I love some of his movies and hate all the other ones.
Yeah.
Like one of my most hated movies when I was a kid was The Deep Blue, which he directed.
I don't think
but
I've seen that.
Leon, Leon of Fifth Element, he also did. I know
didn't
you
like
didn't
the
like
Leon,
Leon
one.
But
it's not called
I liked
Leon,
it.
Though, but I didn't like it. The Professional.
Yeah. Leon was the director's
yeah.
cut of it.
Oh, okay. But I didn't.
That
like
was
the
release in France.
Because you know what? Let's talk. You want to talk creepy. In The Professional, it's basically like this older hitman having a quasi sexual relationship with a teenage girl. That bothered me a lot. No, they didn't physically do anything, but that was.
I always thought that was more of a father daughter.
I didn't see it that way at all. I saw it like she was in love with him, and it was totally creepy to me. Totally creepy. So anyway, let's move on because we've talked a lot about the negatives. So let's go on to some other things besides this horrible movie.
Well, let's. There's one thing I want to talk about was
it's also negative.
Yeah. But it's kind of funny.
That's all right. Yeah, it
so
is. It is.
Walmart had pre-orders for the Super Nintendo,
which was the classic
the
console
Super
one,
Nintendo
like
classic,
the Nintendo
which we've
classic.
Talked about before.
Yeah,
and it was up for 25 minutes, completely sold out.
Uh-huh.
I saw people posting like, "Oh, I pre-ordered 4."
Right, right.
And then like 2 days later, they cancel all the pre-orders.
Yeah,
go,
they said
oh,
it was
whoops,
an accident.
That was a mistake. We didn't mean to put that up on pre-order.
Oh, I just think this is so funny. I
which
mean, this
I
is
mean
so
makes
Nintendo.
Sense because nobody even knows how many are going to get
right.
made of this thing. They're
right.
like, we're going to significantly up the production. You're still going to sell out of them.
I know Nintendo is still going to be a jerk about it. So
but, I mean,
but that was sad. I feel sad for the people who thought they got a pre-order.
Yeah, that's got to feel really bad. You're like, oh, I
yeah.
finally got one, especially after the whole
NES
thing.
Debacle? Yeah, debacle.
Yeah.
But anyway,
and also, I know you sent me the thing that ThinkGeek had some original NES
yes,
classics.
For like 30 minutes, probably, and then
they
sold out.
They were
out
selling
too.
Them in bundles of junk for like $150, so.
Yeah, but you'd have to get
I mean, I would have bought, I definitely would have bought one, because I want one, but.
Yeah.
Although I don't even really think I want it anymore for
no,
the games.
Just,
I just want
I
it
know.
Because I want to have it.
Oh,
since
really?
I don't have it.
Oh.
It's like a collectible. I love collectibles.
I know you do.
Especially.
Now, see, I'm more all about the utility of an item versus collectability.
Oh, I mean.
Like, I would want to get
there
something
are some
to
fantastic
play.
Games in
yeah,
that collection.
Yeah, I know.
And
I did like the original NES.
Yeah, I think I'm still gonna when around September I'm gonna I'll check in on my way to work. I'll probably stop by and hit up local Target or EB Games or something,
see
if they
you get
any.
The SNES.
If I happen to snag one, I'm definitely love to have one. But
yeah, but we're not
so
gonna.
Frustrating. Hopefully they'll make Star Fox 2 available on their console or something.
I don't know.
Because that's an exclusive game.
Yeah,
for the Super
I don't
Nintendo.
Know. Nintendo just seems like all they want to do is frustrate people.
Yeah.
But let me
well,
talk
let's
about
let's talk about your game that you've been
yes!
playing.
So I found this new iOS game on my iPhone, and I found it by accident because I was searching for garden apps, like gardening apps, to help me identify plants in my yard and stuff like that, and it suggested Gardens of Time. Now, a lot of you probably already know about this game because it's been out for a long time. And it was out originally as an app game, and then it got canceled but then this other company picked it up, and now it's a Facebook game, but it's still available on the app. They're not developing new levels for the app, so there's many, many more levels on Facebook and more items. So what it is it's a hidden object game, but I really like it because it's got a little story with it. So it's got this story, like you're time traveling, and you have to collect things, artifacts and things that you can plant in your own little garden that you have, and it's really fun. At first I thought I was going to hate it because you only get so many energy credits to play the scene. Because it's a mobile game. But then I found that there's other ways to get the credits. Like you can friend people on the game. But what I really love, which I think is genius, there's no chat option. There's no messaging option. So all you need your friends for is you can send them free gifts every day. They send you free gifts every day. You can challenge them to puzzles, which helps them. They can request items from you. You can request items from them. So it's kind of nice to be able to find people. And at first I was like, well, how do I find people? And then I was like, oh yeah, there's forums and stuff, which, you know, is a new concept to me. So I Googled some and I found, you know, Facebook forums and paid websites and stuff where people just list their player ID if they want you to friend them. So I got a whole bunch of friends now, so I'm like getting more energy. I'm getting the items that I need to play the game. And actually I don't necessarily mind so much anymore that there's a limit on what you can do, because it does force me to set it down for a couple hours while my energy recharges on there. You know, so I think it's good. Like it keeps me from going through it too fast, and it keeps me from just playing it endlessly for like 3 hours at a time.
And of course you can probably buy energy for real money.
Oh,
right?
Of course. Yeah. And you can buy gold pieces, which let you buy all these fancy special items. And then now see, the reason why I don't want to play it on Facebook is because I keep my Facebook stuff very private. But on Facebook, you actually have to friend people on Facebook before you can add them as a friend on the game. So I don't want to friend all these strangers online. I'm not going to do that. But it's still, they have like 200 levels on the Facebook game, and they only have 44 levels on the iOS. But, you know, I think I'll probably play through my 44 levels and then probably be done with it. So, yeah. But it's fun. I actually really like it. The art is really pretty. The music is really pretty. I like getting to put all the little items in my garden and arrange it however I want. You know, it's just a really fun game, and I've been having a lot of fun with it because I really like hidden object games. So,
yeah.
That's
cool.
So that's my game, Gardens of Time. If you want to friend me, I'm RS912. That's R as in river, S as in song, the number 9 as in Eccleston, the number 12 as in Capaldi.
So one thing I wanted to talk about is there is this article I saw where they were talking. I think it's all rumor. Mm-hmm. But she said Mads Mikkelsen has expressed interest in playing the lead role in a standalone Doctor Doom movie.
Okay, now who is
so Mads Mikkelsen? Is, I think he was like most well known for playing a Bond villain in one of the new Bond movies. I don't remember which one.
Okay.
But remember in Doctor Strange, the villain from Doctor Strange?
Who's Doctor Strange?
The 2016 Marvel movie, Doctor Strange.
Oh, that Doctor Strange. Okay, yeah.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he played Caecilius in that movie.
And who was Caecilius?
Caecilius was the bad guy with the dark eyes that was...
Okay, yeah. That guy was pretty good.
So, apparently
now, Doctor Doom is DC or he's
Marvel?
So,
Doctor Doom is Marvel.
So, how
is
he going to play the different villain in the Marvel universe?
Well, this is why. It's because Fox owns Fantastic Four and the rights to Doctor Doom. And there's talk about doing a standalone Doctor Doom movie, which I think would be fantastic if done well.
Exactly.
And there's
done
rumors,
well.
and apparently Mikkelsen has expressed interest in playing Doctor Doom.
Okay.
And I think that could be really, really good.
If they scrap the last Fantastic Four movie. That
well, I think they have no choice. They can't. Yeah, they can't do anything
ridiculous.
More with that movie.
Well, plus they killed off Doctor Doom in that movie.
I think that movie came out before we were doing the podcast.
Yeah,
but
it did.
My God, we could.
We could
that
have
movie
a,
was
we already ranted about
such
one
a
movie
disaster.
Now, so let's not rant about another movie because that was
but,
bad.
But I am excited. I could really
cool.
get behind a Mads Mikkelsen Doctor Doom
okay,
movie.
Okay, all right.
But I'm not sure how you do Doctor Doom without Fantastic Four, and without the rest of the Marvel universe, because I feel like he's such a good character, but it's always in the context of the greater Marvel universe.
Yeah.
Like he's got to have people to fight.
Well, what else
you know?
Does Fox own? What other characters does Fox own? Do they own the mutants? The X-Men?
Was that Fox?
I don't know, because wasn't that TV show we were watching Fox? Or yeah, was that FX?
I think it, maybe
FX
they do.
Is Fox, right? Or no?
I guess they do, yeah. So I guess they could fight
what was
the
that?
X-Men.
What was that show we were watching that we liked about the telepath guy who was the mutant? Who's like
that was
Xavier's
Legion.
Son? Legion.
That, yeah, that was.
Yeah, so they could bring in like the Legion people.
Yeah, I guess
and
they
the
could.
And the X-Men.
It could be interesting fighting the mutants. I don't know why they never did anything cross between Fantastic Four and X-Men if they owned both.
Well, maybe they just weren't inspired enough, but now that Marvel and DC
well,
are
Well, the
up,
original Fantastic Four movies were all pretty choosy.
Yeah, they were. They were
I
fun to watch, but they were cheesy.
I really enjoyed them.
Yeah, I liked them too. I liked them too. They were
I mean,
fun.
They were fun because they didn't take themselves too seriously.
Exactly.
But I mean,
yeah,
that happens all the time. You've got the guy that the what's his name? Is going to play in Deadpool. He's going to play Cable.
Who's Deadpool? Which guy in Deadpool?
He's going to play Cable in Deadpool.
But which guy in Deadpool?
Cable.
No, which actor?
Oh, that's what I'm looking up.
Oh, I thought and you didn't know. You keep saying the same thing to me. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, Josh Brolin. And he's also the guy who's doing Thanos.
Okay.
So.
And who did Josh Brolin play in Deadpool?
He's in the next Deadpool. He's going to be playing Cable.
But he wasn't anybody in the first Deadpool, right?
Is no, he
saying?
Wasn't. Cable is
a
famous character.
No, I know who Cable is. I thought you were saying the actor was in the first Deadpool movie, and
no,
now
he was
different.
Thanos in the in all the other Marvel movies. All right,
you have
Marvel
to you have
movies.
To explain this to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, so I could get behind a Doctor Doom standalone movie, although I'm afraid that they'll just screw it up.
Yeah, they probably will.
I mean, that's always my fear, but, you know.
Once in a while, stuff comes out good, so we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, it really, I mean, it's a case-by-case thing. If you if you take the time and make a good movie, then it's going to be good. It doesn't matter what you do.
Exactly.
So,
all right. Well, is that about it for...
That's all I had, unless you had anything else.
I think that's
did you see
it.
The new? Did you see the they announced or they showed a picture for the
new doctor?
Domino?
No, Domino. What's that?
Domino is one of the characters from the new Deadpool.
No, I don't watch this stuff. But that reminded me that they did announce the new doctor for Doctor Who, and it's a woman.
Did we talk about
and
that last time?
I don't think so. It's somebody from Broadchurch.
I thought we did talk about it last time. I thought because it had come out.
I don't know.
But
anyway, that reminded me of that. So we'll have to stay tuned for that. I'm hopeful for the new season is all I'll say for Doctor Who.
Yeah. I'm excited for the Christmas special. That
yeah.
Looks good.
Yeah. And I'm excited for the new series. So we'll see how it goes. So anyway, that's about it. If you want to support any of our charities, we ask that you could make a donation to Small Angels Rescue, which we foster rats with. They're the no-kill animal shelter in the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area that cares for rats, mice, hamsters, guinea pigs, gerbils, and I think that's it. So, yes, the no-kill rescue, they care for them through foster homes until they get adopted out. So the link for that's on our website.
Oh, and let me spend a few minutes talking about it. So Extra Life is my charity that I do each year. I do a 24-hour marathon.
Gaming marathon.
Gaming marathon. This year I'm going to be doing 2 12-hour sessions, I think, in October around Halloween because that's when I like to do it. If you want to support me, there's a link on our homepage. I think I'm probably going to be playing Gigantic, which just came out in the past couple of weeks. I've been playing a lot of. It came out on Steam, so it's the official release now of it. It's a really fun game. It's got really cool artwork. It's kind of a take on the MOBA genre and kind of a cross between that and hero shooters. So it's a really fun game. You should check it out on Steam. But I think I'm going to be playing that this year for my Extra Life stream.
And Extra Life supports the Children's Miracle Network.
Children's Miracle Network Hospitals.
Children's Hospital. We support the DC one.
Yep.
And all the money goes directly to patient care. There's no overhead or fees charged out of it or anything like that.
Yeah, so check that out. Check out Gigantic on Steam. It's a really fun game. It's free to play. So,
yeah.
Thanks for listening, guys. Have a good one.
Yep. We'll see you next time.
Bye.